This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Is that the
making coffee on the weekend? Deep end. You know, I was thinking when we get to the end of this series, our last episode can be the dead end.
Oh man, that's depressing.
Is it depressing?
Yeah, it's depressing.
You're not impressed by my depression?
No. Hi, Ninja Kitty. Kitty's on time.
No spam here. Each contribution is a handcrafted gem. Thanks a lot, Cram Rimmon.
Is that like a name that's spelled backwards? Mark.
Nimmer. Oh, yeah. So, once upon a time, it was game day.
Oh, yesterday? Super Bowl. You meant the game that you made me play with you yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Well, that was game night. This is game day.
No, that was like a day. It was like a four-hour game. How long were we playing?
Oh, God. We played twice. It was probably an hour and a half, 90 minutes.
Oh, yeah, at least. Yeah, it was long.
One of my long-standing contributors, he's a subscriber to my channel, was really not pleased with my vocal volume. He said I was shouting too much.
I noticed that. I saw the comments.
So could you tell me, could you just indicate when I'm getting too shouty? But I want to get excited. This is the only time on my channel where I get to be excited. And I don't want to repress myself all the time.
Well, it was funny. People kind of were split about that. There were two different comments on there that I read that were delighted with how much you showed your personality.
Yeah. What's your personality like today?
I don't know. You'd probably be a better judge of that.
Do you have your mood ring on?
I don't wear a mood ring.
You don't?
No.
Okay. It's your cheeky little face. That's your mood ring. It's always giving me micro expressions, like microclimates.
What are you picking up?
Moodiness.
What are you picking up?
You're pensive. Mm-hmm. Furtive.
Oh, really?
Imperious.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
We watched this movie last night, mm-hmm. Talking of games and movies. We had a lot of entertainment going on today, and I hope you guys are having a good day, game day, too. Mm-hmm. A gay day? Gay day? Game day, date, gay day?
Might be a gay day.
No, this is not a gay date right now.
Okay.
Not a gay date. But I don't even know what a gay date is.
A gay date. Would that be a happy date?
I had a gay man try to woo me when I was a young lad.
Oh, yeah?
When I was 20.
Oh.
He would take me out on the town and
I think you told me about this.
Regale me and he would feast. You know, he would treat me to these
buy you dinners.
You know, 7-course meals with all of the like aperitifs and paperitifs, what the one beforehand?
Appetizers.
Postprandial, preprandial drinks.
Okay. Digestif and an aperitif.
Digestive.
That would be after.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but last night we watched Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yep. What did you think of it?
It was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was a difficult movie. I'll let you do your critique, but there was no moral. I didn't understand the moral parameters of the movie, so I was never invested in the movie at all, except for the lead female. Mm-hmm. And she just wore this blanket. She was this beautiful woman, mm-hmm. wearing this blanket, mm-hmm. the whole time and slowly wasting away under a
I liked her a lot.
Morphine addiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought the character development was really good. And so it's a long movie. It was like, what, 2.5 hours?
3 hours.
Oh, 3 hours? Yeah. And I thought that there was going to be a turn. I kept waiting for something to happen. And by the time I realized there wasn't going to be a turn, I felt like I'd wasted my investment.
Were you incised?
Incensed?
Ah. Were you incensed?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe that one scene, there was that one scene. I don't know. I don't want to like give it away, but there's this.
It was the only confrontation in the entire movie.
Yeah, it's the moral confrontation.
Yeah, it was the moral confrontation and it was.
And it felt like it should have been edited. I felt like, did they not hire an editor for this film? They just left everything in. It was kind of frustrating, but the moral seemed, you said this is going to be kind of a woke thing. Okay, I don't remember what your words were.
Well, I'm like, oh no, here we go, white men bad.
Yeah, and it was.
Yeah, might have been bad.
But it was a little more artful than that.
But the FBI were good. So it was kind of like mixed messages.
Government good.
Government good.
Yeah. So,
well, federal government.
Yeah. So
Hoover good.
Yeah, Hoover good. The character development was really good, I thought.
You
but
liked it.
The moral, I didn't.
Like, there was just no framing for it. It was so, frustrating. And then I was
going to tell the plot because some people might not know what it is.
Well, it's just about a Native American town that had a lot of oil. And so they're very, very rich. And mm-hmm. there was some foul play.
Yeah, they were getting, every person in the tribe was getting some kind of a payment. Monthly payment or something, some kind of allotment based on the oil rights.
Yeah, and white men bad.
And yeah, and then these wealthy kind of speculator white men came in and were marrying the women in order to
get the head rights.
Yeah, get the rights to the oil, and then they were killing them off, like either killing the Indians that got in the way or killing the wives, and it's pretty wicked. Cheers.
She needed a little pep in her step.
Well, and these are cute. That's a cute pep. Thank you.
Anyways, I couldn't tell the main character if he cared about anything. He just makes the same tortured face the entire time. So
well,
like,
he loved his
care?
Wife, and you could tell he loved his wife, but then he was killing her sisters. And you were watching her be devastated by that. And he didn't seem to care at all. He didn't seem to have any kind of...
Well, I mean, it's kind of her fault for not stopping him either.
Really?
I don't know. You seem to agree with me. I know, blaming the victim. I'm like, he's really stupid. She's kind of smart. Like, she probably could have figured out, but there's no even intrigue. There was so much to explore, and they didn't explore it.
Yeah, it was a frustrating movie.
It was a frustrating film.
Yeah, I don't know. But you liked the sound.
I really like the sound design, and on, like, you're talking about, like, macro editing, they could have edited it down, but I really enjoy Martin Scorsese's, at least, I don't know if he still has the same editor from Goodfellas and Gangs of New York and The Departed, but there's these tiny little ways that they overlap sound and mm-hmm. sight, and they kind of they compress the scene in these really...
So it's pretty.
I like the cut of their jib, but there was no creative control.
Rib Rascal says, this isn't the one with Tilda Swinton. I'm taking it. No, it's not Tilda Swinton. It had Leonardo DiCaprio.
Robert
De Niro. I don't know the lead actress, but she was...
I think that was her debut.
The highlight of the movie.
I want Leslie to... I actually, you know what? I'm going to go out of my way. If anybody watched that film and you know where I can find those blankets, I want
he wants me
my to squaw... In our show, you would pull off that look so good. No. Everybody would follow you.
Oh, God.
They would appropriate like gangbusters.
This is painful.
How do women appropriate?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, like gangbuster. I don't see women doing many things like gangbusters.
What does that mean?
Like,
what do you mean when you
like
say
that? Like balls to the wall, like rock out with your cock out. It's just not a female thing.
Well, you just used some very masculine phrases.
So is gangbusters, you know?
Well, okay, but...
What... I've never known a single female busted up a gang.
So are you being literal or metaphorical?
No, I'm just saying, like the word just doesn't fit. So I wonder if, like, when women, like, rally.
Oh, well, I don't know. That's a good question. I'll think about it. I'll see if I come up with something. So do you want to talk about something besides the movie?
Yeah, well, there's the movie. We can talk about the game, but we'll talk about the game later. I wanted to talk about something, and it's kind of a delicate topic, and I can have mixed feelings about it. Mm-hmm. And Leslie wanted to go through comments and do time where we spend on comments.
Oh, yeah, but... we can do that at the end, though,
okay.
If you want.
So we will,
just
we will
just
do...
a couple.
Okay, yeah, so we'll do some commenting. And we should do... We should be a little bit more organized and pull comments from the previous.
Well, episodes. Yeah, that's I picked. A
Did
couple.
You do? Okay,
just
so
a
we'll so we'll do some of that mm-hmm. later on. Not that these people need to know what we're going to do. Not that you need to know what we're going to do. I like to fly by the seat of my
pants. I know.
Pants, but...
I'm always asking him, "What are we going to talk about?" And he's like, "You don't need to know."
I never say that.
That's what you imply.
If that was the one thing
that's what you
that you shouldn't say to Leslie to get you off her case, is that it's on a need to know basis. Like, you know, the last scene of The Godfather talking about movies, like that would never fly around Leslie, where the door just kind of slowly closes. She'd be like, "What's going on? What are you guys doing in there? What's going on? Why are you doing that? Why can't I see? What's going on?"
Okay.
She's not a nosy Nancy, but she's a high wife.
I'm a high wife.
Yeah, you're a highly involved wife.
That sounds painful for
didn't
you.
Did I have a viral tweet? I sent my viral tweet going on.
Oh, you see a little Ben Affleck.
Yeah, never apologize, never explain. Yeah, yeah. I didn't have a screenshot.
Yeah, but. No, it's that Ben Affleck, that famous Ben Affleck exasperated, like overwrought, smoking a cigarette picture.
So, a good friend, well, not a good friend of mine, but she's been on my show 3 times mm-hmm. in about 4 years. I speak to her every 18 months or so. It's Daisy, it used to be Ollie Chaudhry mm-hmm. when she was a trans identified female or a trans man.
Okay.
And then she detransitioned to Daisy Chaudhry.
Okay.
And then she got married and now she's Daisy Strongin.
Did you meet her when she was Ollie? Or when was she already Daisy?
I knew of her when she was Ollie because when I first got into this YouTube thing, she was at the peak of her YouTube thing as a trans man.
Oh, okay.
And she had interviewed Jordan Peterson. She paid, like, there was a period of time where you could go on Patreon and pay Jordan Peterson $200.
Okay, yeah, I remember.
And I should have done that. That would have paid for itself over time.
Yeah, it would have been nice to talk with him.
But maybe someday. He said, we'll talk someday. But anyways, I didn't speak to her then, but then she detransitioned and I got in the process of going through and interviewing any public detransitioner who would want to come on.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that work was not just to get that first story, but especially with Helena and Daisy's one and a few others, like, and Sinead.
Do you have this on right now? Because they can't see your face, can they?
Okay. Well, okay. I guess I do have that on. So I think a part of the work that I really enjoy, and it's not just detransitioners, but especially young people mm-hmm. or anybody, is just to kind of check in with them.
Oh, over time.
And over time. And, yeah. And kind of get like a core sample, you mm-hmm. know, like what they do with cheese. They like poke the thing in the cheese and they bring it out and see if it's ripe, you know, and you just want to see.
Keep tasting it over time.
Because humans ripen over time.
Metaphor.
They ripen.
Yes. So, but it's a conversation that happens and you can check back in with the same person and watch the evolution of their life and their thoughts.
And especially highly intelligent, highly capable young people mm-hmm. in the ages of 20 to 25, which is the course of time that I've been interviewing Daisy. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of changes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of switches going back and forth and reconsidering mm-hmm. herself. And then also the way she processes information mm-hmm. and her values start to shift. And so it's been really amazing. And I interviewed her very recently and while we were in Hawaii. Mm. And that interview actually got a fair amount of play because she had been, she kind of went viral because she was on a PragerU documentary.
Yeah, I remember that. I haven't seen it, but.
So she just had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
She just had a baby and it's absolutely beautiful. So there's a lot of different things to talk about this, but you want to read that, the tweet that she posted?
Yeah, sure. It says, if I could only somehow go back in time to 2018 and show myself these photos, those are not happy tears. This was her very first feeding, 40 minutes old. I know breastfeeding does not work for every woman, but the hopelessness of my situation is hitting me hard this time. I don't even have the chance to try. There's no lactation consultant, no surgery, nothing that can ever make it so my children can suck their mother's breast. There's nothing that my body can create for them. There will never be. And the worst part is, it's all my fault. Yeah, and look at her face. Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to blow it up. So she put this up. This is going viral. I want to be absolutely respectful about this because there's something primordially sacred about this moment, about this picture, about this photo. Like, this is probably the closest thing to heaven that the body experiences, like the reproduction of life. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about sex, but this is the ultimate.
Well, that's what sex is about.
Culmination of that particular momentary climax.
Yeah, it's life.
And it throws in relief a whole lot of what we've been talking about when we talk about value, when we talk about sex, and when we talk about the whole trans and gender issue.
Yeah.
It's the culmination. Like, you are
and
touched.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, so sad that she's feeling what she's feeling, but she's also a beautiful young woman with a beautiful baby.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's interesting. It brings up a lot. I think it's.
I need you to speak up a little bit because we have your heater going.
Oh yeah, I'm a heater because I'm cold. Yeah, it's I have four kids and I breastfed them all, and that was important. I think that it's also something that people don't realize the value. I mean, we were talking about this last time, I think, about how beauty has been sort of commodified
Yes.
and made superficial. And
Well, beauty is by definition superficial.
is it?
Is it not?
Well, you yourself made an argument that it wasn't it a signal towards something transcendent?
Yeah, but that, like that's the yeah, I mean that's the ephemeral divine. Like we just bought some flowers and we were trying to choose which flowers to get. I'm like, let's get the ones that haven't even shown themselves yet. Yeah, let's participate in the entire like momentary expression of that.
Well, the do you want to tell the other piece of the story, the other tweet that came out that was critical, or do you want to sit on this one for a moment? Or not critical, I guess.
Do you have more to say?
Well,
Because I
yeah, I
think
mean
this is really important.
it's
This is the
it, they both
cornerstone.
tie into both,
Okay.
but the conversation ties together because I think that what and you could describe the other one too. I mean, there was a picture that was put up of the same person when she was presenting as a trans
Okay. Then
man.
let's go
Well,
to that one.
yeah, and she's got scars on her chest. The picture that came up first that he originally had put with it, where you
Yes.
looked at it, you were like, "Ooh, that feels bad to see that in juxtaposition or with this thing that she put up."
Well, I just there's a fine line, and Wesley Yang, I've met him several times now. I think he's a cool
He
guy.
seems to be doing good work. I
He
don't know
does
that
good
much
work.
about
Yeah,
him.
so I don't want to be critical of him, but I'm a little iffy about how he frames this, just because it's overlaid on such a profound image, and
You just
maybe
felt like
that's why.
it was
So let me just, before
okay.
we comment, let me just read this other tweet.
Okay.
There's two tweets by Wesley Yang. And Wesley Yang, he retweets that picture of Daisy with her baby and that story that Daisy is expressing of deep regret. And Wesley says, Strongen posted her transition online. You can see the euphoria radiating from her face after she cut off her breasts to join a delusional cult at 20. Though she left the cult a year later, the medicalized self-harm she enacted was permanent. Here she is at 20. Quote, This is the best decision I've ever made in my life. I just gained 1,000 new reasons to live. And there's one more to show. Boom, boom. In the screenshot above, she was acting as an online recruiter for a multi-level marketing scheme that she herself had been enticed into by other online influencers a few years before, when she was an awkward and confused teenage girl. Now, I think that that is absolutely so, it's on point. I have no issue with it. I'm a little wary because of the way that Twitter compresses information. I'm just wary of using that baby as a, as a mothers against drugs, a mad kind of like a poster child
So it was the
for
fact that her baby was
regret.
pictured?
I don't want to get too deep into that. I was just like a little wary, so I just want to mention that I don't want to participate in the glorification of like that contrast, but I know that the contrast flies. And I guess the core of it, the core of the critique from Wesley and from a lot of other people that are retweeting is that Daisy, and you said something really interesting, Daisy had no right of consent. Or, and this is, I named this episode Time's Arrow, and just because I was thinking of something, it's like we're consenting. She was at that moment at
Was she
16,
16 when it was
20,
done?
20,
I don't know.
16, 20, 20, let's say, if I recall correctly. She was consenting for that moment, but she was not consenting for every step of the 4 years from there. She was no longer consenting to that, right? So it's just consent. I don't even think that that is that. I don't think that's a philosophically explored domain. Like, what does consent
Over
actually
time.
incorporate? What
Oh,
is it?
because we know that along the developmental track, there are points at which we value different things differently, and we can predict that at some point, like when you, I was saying when we were talking earlier, I was saying if you go out and survey a bunch of 16-year-old girls and ask them if they plan to breastfeed, they're probably all going to make like that's gross. No, you know, none of them are going to want to say that they're going to want to do that. It'll be the rare girl who says, oh yeah, definitely, I definitely want to do that. It'll be a very different picture if you survey 28-year-old women or 32-year-old women. Very different. And so at the point that she would have been developmentally, at the point where she decided to have a mastectomy, it would be, you could argue it would be developmentally appropriate for her not to value the breast as a working organ. And so does the medical industry, is it ethical for them to take as valid consent the developmentally appropriate rejection of a particular organ that later on that same individual could come to see differently? Yeah, and I would argue that it's just straight medical malpractice. It's just you're foreclosing on someone's future options for cosmetics, not for any other reason.
And that was part of, I guess, going back to what Wesley's pointing out, and maybe this kind of ties a bow on my wariness about this. Daisy was a poster child for female transition. Mm. She was emphatically involved in what Wesley calls a cult. Other people have called it a cult. She was a true believer. Mm-hmm. She was filled with euphoria. Like, this is like, so many options are open to me. Like, yeah. I'm liberated. I'm going forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 4 years later, she's like, oh my God, what the heck did I do to myself? Why did I do that? And so there's a counterbalance that, yeah, maybe she should be a poster child for that.
Yeah.
Because she put herself there, and to counterbalance that, like, okay, look at where I was, look at where Daisy was, look at where she is now.
Well, it feels disrespectful in a way to see it held up. Like here's what you were doing before, and to have to face that when you can see that she's obviously going through something that's really a painful introspection and painful self-examination. Yeah. And yet, how do we learn best but by stories and by narrative? And if she's offering that up, and she is somebody who had a strong social media presence that lives online still, it's still there. And so perhaps it's a gift that she's giving in a way by displaying her entire story arc. And what he's doing is just holding up.
Yeah.
He's just, if the line continues, the timeline goes like this, he's just bending it and putting these two pieces together so you can really get a strong visual.
Yes.
And that's very powerful. And I think that tells an important story for anybody who's still on the fence about what to think about these things.
Yeah. I really do think that, it's just such a novel. There was another D-trans girl, Grace, who I met in New York. She showed up and she had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it was just this image. It was this crazy postmodern Madonna image, mm-hmm. this beautiful maternal, eternal maternal, mm-hmm. especially because she's young. They're both like early 20s or mm-hmm. mid 20s. Mm-hmm. And they're participating in this glorious act of sacrifice and worship and glory of life, and it's just so divine. And you see that their chest is just gone, you know. And you have this vision, and maybe you hear something in their you hear like the change in their voice, and there's this twist of that whole narrative of the D-trans or the trans-identified male, ROGD, mm-hmm. like a very specific sort of
trans-identified female,
yeah, mm-hmm. a very specific type of trans identification from the female point of view,
mm-hmm.
that is a it's there's some sort of archetypal pattern that's being expressed here that hasn't been able, that I think probably could have been expressed in throughout history if we could look through it, like this tomboy kind of goddess, like the Athena, this woman who this young woman who at a certain point believed that she's beyond sex, she's almost asexual or anti-erotic, she wants to transcend the erotic, she wants to be a Peter Pan, she wants to be the boy, so she in this day and age, she tapes her chest down, or she cuts off her breast. She cuts off the signifier of her femininity to escape it, and then it just kind of comes up and says, "I don't care about, like, I don't care what you thought. Like, this is your destiny." And her destiny just kind of like folds over herself, like that ego transformation. And the beauty of that ego death, the beauty of that process of detransition that they express, like where there's these moments where, Chloe Cole, when I interviewed her, this voice came to her, it's like, stop lying to yourself. Like there's this just this powerful force going on in there. And so it's tragic and it's so beautiful at the same time that, life finds a way. Like the human, oh, the mighty works of woman are just like, oh, it's a baby. It's like, oh, whoa, the baby. And it's just, there's this different thing. And I mourn our society, or I grieve our society, for not allowing women, young women and girls to see that as an apex of femininity, as see femininity as an emanation of motherhood in a way. But I, as a man, I'm being romantic about it. Everybody's got to make different choices and stuff, but it seems to have been slandered a lot after that thing called the sexual revolution. Motherhood was kind of
Well, it's the sexual
a
revolution plus also just the guilt that's been put on women for wanting to have babies. I mean, you've got the kind of
Right.
the yeah, I mean the whole myth of overpopulation says don't have babies, don't reproduce. You can have a good life without having kids.
Yeah. You have a lot more vacation time, a lot more free time. You can eat a lot more noodles and drink a lot more wine, have a lot more
Eat more
cats.
noodles.
I don't know. You can eat like fancy noodles, like $800 noodles.
Somebody asked if you have huge hands.
Do I?
No,
Maybe
hold up
they
your
were talking to
hand. No,
you.
they said
I don't have huge
just men
hands.
have huge hands. I
Well,
think there's like a
I think
distortion of the camera.
that's a coded question. We're not going to get to on the live stream. Was there more that you had to say about that?
I think there's so much to say about that, but I'm not really sure. I mean, it's just, I wonder how she feels about that. It would be, I don't know. It'd be worth maybe having a discussion with her to see if she has what her perspective is on that, again, that like timeline splicing thing. But also if you've been online, if you've made your life on social media and given that information out there, maybe it isn't inherently disrespectful to examine that from a public perspective. And
Well, I mean, regardless, she posted it up there, and she's used to it. And like it pales into comparison with the attention that she got when that PragerU company bought up all of the Twitter ad space for an entire day and put her face all over it as the poster child of detransition. And this is part of her plot arc. I think that this is,
I don't know that story. I don't know what that was about. I mean,
I
did
just,
was she upset about that? Was that
it's
okay?
so, well, I mean, it was just really stressful. She got a bunch of, she was just kicked, she was used as a football, and she was kicked this way and that. And she's aware of that. And she's been online for a really long time. And we spoke, part of when we speak about that. She's always like, everybody thinks I'm navel gazing when I come on your show. I'm like, well, that's kind of what my show does to people. So don't worry about it,
Well, it's interesting, like the whole idea of the influencer, right? There's this idea that you can control what you influence. And can you? I mean, once you put yourself on the screen, once you put your information on the internet publicly, are you consenting to the use of that however people wish to use that? Like there's been a lot of people totally hating you lately, for instance. And I, after that last debacle with the online attacks
Oh,
from,
do you want to it was funny.
okay, we could talk
No,
about it
I
even.
really spoke about
So,
that.
yeah, we
I
talked.
just I told I said a joke
Yeah,
and
you
you
said a
laughed.
joke. What was it? We were talking about, you and I had this conversation last time we did one of these about, and I think the gender neutral names for genitals came up during our conversation. So we were laughing about how awful these are. You know, they're just so awful. I remember when my daughters were young, there was this real push, the mommy wars, you know, like moms are always really nipping at each other and trying to say, you're doing it wrong, you're doing it wrong. Mothers are, at least online, very judgmental of other people. And so there was this
You don't
really,
say.
yeah. So there was this very strong sentiment being expressed that you have to name body parts correctly. You must give them their correct names. Don't use cutesy names. It's not your bottom. It's not.
Is that your bottom?
It's not your hiney. You've got to call things what they are.
Bouncing biscuits.
It's probably not your bouncing biscuits. No, especially not to your child, because that might be a little creepy.
Can I call yours the bouncing biscuits?
Well, you do whether I want you to or not. So,
Captain Squaw and the bouncing biscuits.
Oh, man.
That'd be a great drum line.
So you're just going to get yourself in more trouble, aren't you?
So
then you came on solid ground with us the next day, I guess, that Monday. I don't remember what we were talking about. What we started out and... somehow the joke came. You made a joke about if
it's an old joke. I made it.
You said
music.
If the do you want to say it?
Do you want to say it?
Okay,
I want to hear you say it.
so they can clip me saying it.
Yeah, exactly.
And put it all over the internet.
Yeah.
But it was like if the appropriate term for vagina is hole, front hole.
Yeah.
Then is your mistress your side hole?
Yeah.
And it was a terrible joke. It's totally stupid.
And
but
you're my prime hole.
But I laughed at you, and so did so did Jennifer and Deborah. Yeah. We all thought it was.
And just, your handmaids.
Yeah. And so then, yeah, a bunch of women started tagging me and things all over Twitter, saying that I was a tittering handmaiden or a giggling handmaiden, yeah. And that I allow my husband to call me his prime hole. And it was just like humorless. Like you totally miss the context.
Yeah.
And but it. It went all over the place, and then there were people saying, I used to like her stuff, and now I think she's, you know, she's obviously whatever, stop subscribing to her stuff. She's terrible for whatever. So,
if you're menopausal, are you ovulously?
What?
Actually, that your
my
name...
crime is that I think you're amusing. That's my crime.
You're going to spill that all over you. Well, I mean, I don't owe anybody any explanations.
Well, but
I don't owe anybody any apologies, and I'm just material.
That's why so you are Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I'm Ben Affect.
So, but the question is, yeah. Is it just fair game? I mean, it's on
I
the internet. It's all fair game. So.
There's that fake Eleanor Roosevelt quote that I can't remember off the top of my head, where interesting people talk about ideas. Midwits talk about plants and stupid people talk about
people. Talk about people.
Yeah. And so
we're talking about people.
There has been on
Maybe Twitter, we're stupid.
No, we are stupid.
Okay.
Absolutely. There has been a ongoing, like, you know that planet Jupiter? It's got that storm that's like 900 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just this roving band of trouble. In this kind of planet of feminism, like it's all these feminisms, you know, all these storms and currents and depths and gases and fluids and maybe some solids in there floating around, you know, and there's this huge storm of these harpies. I'm sorry to say, they're just going around in circles, just like eating and consuming everything that they can. And they went through and you saw this with the Phil Illy thing, but you didn't see that.
Well, they drug that back up.
No, but when the Phil Illy thing happened, that dress gate, that was the first time you were exposed to the full, like, storming of it. And you're watching me and you're worried about me because I was, like, in
I
it.
I just thought, like, are stressful. You okay? They're saying, it's like I'm reading horrible things about you. Like, I don't know how... Why would people say such terrible things? I guess I don't like this internet thing.
Yeah, you're taking.
I don't want to play this game.
Yeah, you're taking the Andrew Doyle route.
Yeah, it's.
But
awful.
So it kind of died down.
Yeah.
But it kept on going. They were just focusing on something else, and then they come around to Ava.
Eva.
And then they get back on you, and then now they're going through Stella, and then they go through Andrew Doyle, and it's the same echo chamber or echo dome of some sort. It's the same people, and it keeps on just It's just like it's a phenomenon in and of itself, and more people are commenting on it. More and more people are getting aware of it. More and more people are like, okay, maybe Benjamin, you know, he's a dumbass and a dickweed and whatever. Maybe he was onto something about like, you know, this there's this phenomenon, and it's troublesome. And people, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But it's never going to stop
Well, I wonder
because
how
it's really
much.
easy for these people to say mean things, and they love being mean together. They just they follow each other, liking each other and getting
It
mean together.
reminds me of the social justice thing, though. I mean, it's very much the same kind of thing
Orwell's house cat is going to come into the
Oh
comments
yeah,
on this one.
Orwell's house cat. He's
He's going to
somebody,
come
he
in.
hates me.
Well, yeah, but he's
He
going to
says,
say.
how many times does she defend
Yeah,
feminism?
but
Like
he's going to
this.
say she's almost going to see the light. And this is the commentary. It's like, yeah, we all knew that feminism was proto-woke. That's the whole woke thing was preceded by SJWs, which was preceded by feminists. Like the etiology
Yes,
of
but
this
does
particular.
feminism not get broken down? I mean, there's obviously different, they call them waves, but aren't there different elements of what is feminism? I mean, at its simplest, isn't feminism just the idea that women should have equal rights under the law to men? Isn't that just the idea? Should
Well, I mean, if you want to talk to Karen Strawn, and I would really love to have her on the channel if she ever consents to another interview, but she was one of the earlier iteration anti-feminists,
Anti-feminist. Okay, I'd like to hear about
so-called
that. Okay.
anti-feminists, who she goes through and her storytelling, if we want to get all Vladimir Putin on it, and I can't compress it all down there,
Oh
is she makes an argument that women, feminism was never about equality. It was always about gaining things without giving up privileges.
Okay.
Women have had certain protections under the law over time, and they wanted more rights. They wanted more say in government, but then it exchanged. Like when men got the vote, it was in exchange for conscription. Women were never conscripted. They wanted the vote without having to pay for their lives for the vote, right? And so if you see that perspective shows feminism as advancing rights without giving up
What
any
about the
privileges.
right to own property? I mean, if we're talking about voting, that's one thing, but property rights is another.
Yeah.
And so if a woman's husband dies and she's just his property, then what happens to her? Does she not have the right to
Well,
be?
that is the legal case, and if feminism stopped there, it would just be liberalism. But it kept on
Okay,
going.
but
It
to
wants
say that
equal representation.
maybe foundational feminism is
Yeah, but
just liberalism extended to women?
Yeah, then you don't need, it's just egalitarianism. You don't need feminism if you have egalitarianism.
Okay.
You don't need equity
But
if you
you
have
need something
equality.
that says women should be in this picture, and it's not just men, and it's not just like white men, so there's not, the 3/8 or whatever.
What's this?
Like what was it, the people who weren't white in the United States were once 3/8 of a man. Wasn't there that law?
That
I mean,
was
I'm
well.
probably in terms of
We're gonna
property,
get really messy here. I believe that that vote thing was about the North knowing that the South would just
Oh
have
yeah,
all of their slaves vote how
vote
they
in
told them.
mass
Yeah,
in block.
which is kind of what the Democrats did, anyways. But are doing now. But because it's a viable political strategy. Anyways, it's the difference between, there's a lot of different elements to this. There's equality versus equity. There's authoritarian versus individualism or liberalism, I guess, in the sense of liberty versus authority. There's individual versus collective. And feminism, just as a term, already out the gate is aimed towards equity, collectivism, and authoritarianism. It's aimed for the unified voices of women. And this is why you see women such as yourself, who are exemplars of a strong, independent woman, I mean, myself excepted, and all the support that I give to you to make you feel independent and strong, all that empowerment that I kind of sneak up on you and dump on your Bouncin' Biscuits. I lost my train of thought because I started thinking about your butt.
Oh no.
Man, this is a great circuit of life,
Women
isn't
such as yourself are exemplars of
it?
what?
So A woman such as you, as soon as you disagree with the women who are claiming the mantle of feminism, are a handmaiden, you're a class traitor, you are a second-class woman, and they are more vicious towards you than pretty much
but
any man would be.
That's a purity spiral.
That is a purity spiral, which is
specific to feminists.
It's specific to the frame.
Okay.
Once you start saying, we are fighting for women's rights,
right,
that assumes, and this is, I made a tweet about it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Tucker Vladimir Putin tweet.
Yep.
Like, oh, like this gender critical infighting is not new, Tucker. In order to understand, like, they've always been infighting. The history of feminism is infighting. You have liberal feminism versus rad feminism. You have sex positive versus sex negative. And if you go and you read The Rights of Women by Erica Bakioloki,
mm-hmm,
I'll link that in the description if I can remember to do that. That is a very well-documented history of feminism, beginning with liberalism, and showing that feminism as a collective movement towards rights for women has always had tons of disagreement in it.
But are you suggesting that feminism invented that frame, that process did not exist in social interactions prior to feminism?
No, I'm saying that the People's Judean Front or the Judean People's Front, mm-hmm, It's inherent in the frame of feminism.
You're saying it is a necessary component. It is
a byproduct of collective action.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going to happen in collective action. This is what's going to happen, and so this is just what's going to happen, because if the collective is trying to get a goal, anybody who's against that goal is no longer part of the collective.
Yeah, it's utilitarianism.
And so to name itself feminism is always already to assume that it's speaking for all women, speaking for women's rights. Like, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it is tied and regulated by egalitarian or a higher kind of broader framework, mm-hmm, or a transcendent ideal, what is woman?
Mm-hmm.
What is a woman? What is feminism's answer to what a woman is? And you see all the different feminisms are defined by their answer to the question of what is a female? What is a woman? What is woman's rights? Is a woman a rational agent? Is a woman an individual? Is a woman a mother? Is a woman a productive, a reproductive member of society? And you see over the history of feminism where there's always been this tug of war, and liberal feminism has won out over and over and over again. And it's always at the expense of other kind of more conservative or more realistic, I would say, holistic views of what a woman is. And the gender, and this is the last thing I'm going to say. Hopefully I haven't been yelling this whole time.
Somebody's going to say that you are, I'm sure.
This Daisy's plot arc shows the extent of how far feminism under that purely egalitarian, individualistic, oddly collectivist and individualistic at the same time, that furthest extent is that you are post-female. Like, you are liberated from even being... feminism has liberated you from being a woman now. You're liberated now. And then like, who are you when you're liberated from that? And her plot arc is the discovery of, like, she's greater than the sum of her ego. Or individualism, and that she, like, her reproductive capacity, her being a mother, her entering into the relationship of forming a baby in her womb and then giving that baby into the world, and then, like, feeling that loss of connection, that she severed her connection. The breast had a purpose. It had a purpose, and she severed that. And that severing, she says in that thing, is like, gave her unlimited possibility in it and nullified this connection. Mm-hmm. And it's painful. I went on a really long rant. Hopefully that made some people upset.
Do you want to trade me?
Oh, you don't want this? Oh, you want
this? This one's cold.
This is how I empower you.
Yeah.
My empowerment fluid.
I don't know. I'm going to just... I don't have a lot to add or respond to with regard to feminist philosophy, because it's just never been something... I'm sorry. Maybe this is not... Maybe I should have different views on this, but it's never been something that interested me an awful lot. And I don't know that much about it. I really don't. But I do think that a lot of what you're describing, I'm not sure I would attribute it directly to feminism. I think that these processes are bigger than that. And I think that you can overlay the same process on many different developments, social developments. I
Such
think
as.
That, I mean, what we're talking about, that basically this whole purity spiral, this groupthink and the way that people peck at each other, I do see it in the context of feminism. And I think that it's, I see what you're saying, but
Well, it might be because feminism is kind of so small that it
I'm not sure. I think
it
gender
more, but
ideology, I'm not convinced that it's a direct outgrowth of feminism. I think that it maybe is, maybe isn't. But I'm more interested in describing what is.
Okay.
That just tends, I mean, I'll be the Tucker and you can be Vladimir Putin and I'll just say, okay, well, thanks for all that history. So let's get to the point.
What's the point? Who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? What is the Nord Stream pipeline of gender critical? The war, the turf wars.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I really think that it is interesting to the way that people behave online, the way that people bully each other, and this kind of it exemplifies the very thing that I have been disturbed about with the social justice ideology, which is the complete nullification of the individual in order to press one's point. So, for instance, the hypocrisy is so blatant when people are, it's just the same thing as calling, if you have a racial ideology and you're trying to get a point, you're anti-racist ideas across, and a black person disagrees with you, you dismiss them and call them an Uncle Tom.
Well, he's
because now they, you know, it's like you use the.
Did you hear the? Did you hear the white face of the black face of white supremacy? That's what they called. That's what
Larry
the LA
Elder,
Times.
Wasn't
Larry
it?
Elder.
Yeah, I heard that.
Was it Larry?
I think so. Yeah, and these people who are talking about how they don't like you because you are a misogynist. That Benjamin Boyce, he's a terrible misogynist. We can't stand him. He's a terrible
misogynist.
Okay, thank you for adding that little spice. The voice of seasoning.
The voice of seasoning.
So yeah, but then they'll in the next breath they'll say, "And look at his wife; she's a tittering handmaiden." You know, they will say the most misogynist thing, in order to call you a misogynist. So it's like, get out of here. You're not a real woman. He doesn't believe that women are real women, you know? And it's just, it's cutting off your nose to spite your face. And I see that process over and over again. And I have been thinking that a lot of it is collectives. A lot of it is just collectives because as
tribalism.
Well, and also the anonymity of distance. It's like driving in your car. You can get mad at the people in their car and assume all kinds of things about them and road rage, yell about the guy over there and what an asshole he is. But if you were really looking at him and if you were sitting in his car with him and watching the judgments that he made, you might see him as a human being. You're distanced from him. And so you can start to treat people in a less human way. You're making a lot of faces. So you have thoughts. Let's
No, I'm just thinking like, cause we were driving and somebody was driving dumb and I was trying to get through to him. I was looking at his side mirror. I'm like,
were you willing him to?
Like, no, I'm just like, do you understand that you're jacking my cruise, man? When I'm on the road, you need to understand, like I'm cruising.
It's all he can do not to wave at women. It's a lot of pent-up cruise energy.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm just like, my hands are on 10 and 2. There's no waving at women. All of my erotic libidinal force is in that gearbox and on that pedals and the wheelie thing.
Oh no.
And the tires and the feel of the chassis and the road curves and all that stuff, you know, like that's where it is. So yeah, so
that's your libidinal force.
People,
I was just checking the time.
Okay. Oh, it is time. I bet it's game time, right?
Is it game time? Do you want to look and see if there's any comments you want to respond to, and then I will pull up some from last time?
Oh, you know what? We started 10 minutes after, so we have 10 more.
Oh,
10
more. Oh, we so, do. Okay.
Do you want to give your first impressions of Ark Nova?
Oh gosh.
Oh gosh.
It's complicated.
Okay.
It's got a lot of different.
Yeah. This systems. Is a board game.
Yeah. Do you have it?
Yeah.
You want to show it?
Well, I put it over there. It's okay. There's too much to even show. Like,
oh,
I would
gosh.
Have. Did you take
I
a picture?
I can send you a picture. You can put it up.
Just airdrop it to my
oh, okay.
thing.
Yeah. It's complicated. We We were playing this. We played it two
twice,
nights in a row,
two
and
nights in a row.
I felt like we were having arguments. It was so intense.
It was pretty intense. Airdrop.
Airdrop.
Yeah.
Okay. No people found. Oh, there you are.
Just give it a second. Yeah. So it's a board game. You're building a zoo, and you get different cards. So there's this big old deck of cards, and you wait. How do I do this? So
you have to accept up there.
Why does accept. It do that? You want to look for.
There you go. It's super complex.
Oh, shoot. I don't know why it puts it.
Mm.
Was that yesterday?
Yeah, it was 2 days ago.
Today? No, it was last night.
Okay.
Yesterday, February 9th. Wait, is
well,
that
I.
Yeah.
Okay. I play games with you because I know how much you enjoy it.
Yeah, so this is Ark Nova. This is just the two player. It goes up to four people. It's on the screen now if you're listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
And thanks for tuning into the podcast. Oh, and there's this cool thing. When you say, don't forget to like and subscribe to my channel, YouTube reads that and then like flashes the like button and flashes the subscribe button.
Oh,
and I wanted to see if that works. So we'll have to go back to the 50-minute mark of that. So anyway, so you can't see my... you can't see that. There's no way I'm going to explain it to you. I think it'll be good, but there's so many different moving parts that until we're both up to speed, we can't actually enjoy it because
we're
I'm
still
playing,
trying to learn it. Look, we got a thumbs down. Somebody hates the game.
Don't bring attention to the thumbers, the down thumbers, man. They want nothing more than to gain your attention. So I think it's potentially a really good game, but there's so many moving parts. Earth is still probably much more accessible.
Yep.
Much more fun, much more easy to table.
Mm-hmm. To table.
Yeah, that's what they call it when you bring a game to table. Like they just make a verb to table. Did we play Calico yet?
Yeah, we played Calico a couple times.
I mean, on
oh no,
we haven't
no,
played
but
Calico.
We should play them on your game channel because I think it's such a specific thing. Not everybody has the patience to watch a game, but I'll play with you on your game channel.
Well, anyways, so Ark Nova is pretty interesting. Did you find some little?
Oh.
Things that you wanted to speak
yeah,
to?
Yeah, see, there's a super chat.
There's
so
a super chat.
See.
What's up, guys? Hope you're good.
Progressive glasses.
Andrew Joyner. Thanks for joining, Andrew. Let's see the sub button. It might, Woot Basement says he doesn't see the sub button flash. It might have to, like, it won't be till later because YouTube doesn't live. I don't think they do live text to speech yet.
Oh, really?
That would be surprised, but I wouldn't put it beyond them.
Well, here's one.
Okay.
Orwell's house cat.
Oh, here we go. Your favorite friend.
Leslie is remarkably defensive about feminism, intervening every time it's mentioned to relieve it of any accountability, just like feminists do, even if she herself claims not to identify as a feminist. It's become a fun game to spot it now. So far, three this episode, more to come. So I wonder what my score will be for this one.
Not taking, what was the heart of the criticism?
That I defend feminism.
That you don't take responsibility. I thought that was.
Oh, was that what it was? I relieve feminism of any accountability.
You know what? I want to try to agree with you about this not being a phenomenon restricted to feminism by bringing up. It's the election season in the United States of America, and that basically just means the least important, most important election that we have, which is the presidential election. We're supposed to care so much about. And then we kind of like blunder our way through like local elections that arguably have more power.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it's Trump versus Biden, right? And you go over and I look at the Biden people. You know, there's this one person, Joe. She's a Biden supporter, like
she's
an influencer. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know who you know. I don't know.
Okay.
Like, I don't follow your Twitter follows.
Okay. I didn't know what
her
we
name's
were talking
Joe.
About.
She's been like she's very active. She's very pro Democrat. It was really funny a few years ago. The Biden administration invited all of their online Twitter influencers, and they're all a bunch of dorks, you know, and all they were a bunch of reply guys to Trump. They were just like in every single Trump thread, hating on him expressively. They're just so blatant propagandists. And by that, I mean, we're all propagandists, but they don't have any sort of moral compass other than when, like when winning is the only thing that actually matters. And so they are just total hypocrites and constantly, you know, pushing a certain narrative in a, or pushing the narrative in a certain direction. And you go over there and you find them because what's going on with this current administration is inexcusable. I'm sorry to get political on this because it doesn't really actually matter to me. I think it doesn't, but it's just so, it just takes up so much space
Yeah.
in the collective consciousness.
So you go to look at the Biden people.
Because this guy, Joe Biden, is his name. He was excused from criminal activity. They said
For being incompetent.
he did criminal activity, but we're not going to charge him because he can't remember when his son died. He just can't remember. He's not continent. He's not even on this continent. If that's the right joke to put there, right? It's egregious that this guy who has the nuclear launch codes, and then you think about it, you're like, okay, so this is probably why everything's going to shit, because there's no central leadership, and everybody who's running the show is all like going, they're all infighting, so they're making terrible decisions. They're all just thinking according to their just greed and selfishness, because there's nobody holding anybody accountable up there. That's why the border's doing this, and the energy's doing that, and the dollar's doing this thing, and they're all just kind of like running around. And it's just inexcusable. But then you have like this coterie of Biden pushers, you know, like they are there to excuse Biden to do this narrative. And so you go like, okay, so what are you trying to think? And then you see some son of a gun, some schmo say, try to argue with them. Like you have this pro-Biden statement or this Biden excuse, and then this guy comes up there like, actually, you're wrong. And then all the piranhas jump on him and say like, you're crazy, you're a liar, you know, like they just like grind down that person. And it's obvious that there's no talking with these people. And there's thousands of people who are entrenched in this narrative, who have staked their online, at least their online personalities, if not like their whole personality, or a certain large percent of their personalities are based on this camp. And you see that with the right wing too. I think the right wing's a little bit more fun, but then you see it doing its thing. I think the right wing's a little bit more fun because it's just like a bunch of clans right now because there's no unifying principles right now. So there's a lot of jockeying for power. So it just seems like it's generating more discussion than the left for me. And plus, like, the left generated some things that I'm really just not sold on. And so I'm kind of tending to favor more right-wing ideas, but I
Is
like the
that just
discourse
now, right now, or in general?
in general. Well, I mean, if you look at like if you go back and you look at like the history of right-wing and left-wing, and if you get into the whole thing about like fascism and liberalism and communism, if you that there's a Dugin book, and he's a very controversial author, Alexander Dugin. He's a Russian philosopher. He's called Putin's brain. He's got this really interesting perspective on Western history, where there were these three competing political systems: fascism, communism, and liberalism. And they fought it out over the course of the 20th century. And liberalism won. And the problem with liberalism winning is that it's resting on its laurels, and there's no other system that's competing with it or challenging it, and there's certain fundamental problems with liberalism that it's just taking for granted. It's at the end
It
of
has
history.
nothing to balance it.
Capitalism and democracy are just like, we're at the end of history. What's the alternative to liberalism? And without a fourth way, without another political system, this is Dugin's thought, and I'm crunching it down extremely. Without like a competitor to liberalism, liberalism is just going to slowly decay and fall apart. And Dugin's got levels some pretty intense critiques against it. I just like the dissident right because they're into critique mode, and I'm waiting for them to actually propose positive ideas. And the most solid, across the board, positive the idea that I've seen the right come up with is small communities that are reliant on each other, based on some sort of moral foundation, and probably, like it or not, with a traditional religious thread running through it that is more or less given lip sync to or actual sincere devotion to the religious, theological aspect, but as a binding principle. That's the only way to actually be functionally
So
anti-globalist.
kind of a radical decentralization.
It would be a distributism, yeah.
Okay, interesting. But you started that chain
Tirade, I'm
in
chanting
order
so
to
much.
agree with me
Yeah.
about something.
That the the particular virulent behavior that we see eroding from within the gender critical so-called cause, that purity spiraling, that echo chambering, that tribalism, and certain of those really nasty tactics are in political discourse broadly. They are there in other political discourse broadly. The thing that I find particularly in focus with feminism is that I'm really invested in the topic of gender, and they take me out personally. Like, they go after me personally. They treat me as a punching bag. So, like, it's just more, nobody cares about me as a right winger or a left winger. Like, those people, like, don't care about me because I don't really care about
But
them,
it's the
you
feminist,
know.
the so-called
But it's
feminist.
just like the so-called feminist, or like, yeah, they call themselves feminists, you know, like the card-carrying feminists, you know. And
Well, I guess it's just
I really want to critique them because I want to limit their power, because there's a lot of really important work to do to save children from the chopping block. And I kind of stood up to Dave, who I really admire, Dave the Distributist. He went after Lindsay, because Lindsay behaves in certain ways that turn a lot of people off online. And Dave kind of mocked him about that book on the queering of the American child. And I stood up for Lindsay. And I don't stand up for friends. I don't like playing that game, but I'm like, this is a really good book, and it's really important. It's a lot of important information for parents to understand what is happening in these schools. And Dave's like, yeah, I get that. I was just making fun of Lindsay. I'm like, yeah, I get that too. But defeating the, you're telling me to shut up here.
No, I'm not. I'm
No,
just
you're just squeezing my volume button down
not
there.
the volume, just pace. You can
I feel like I talk too much,
You
and
don't
then
talk too
I'm
much.
very sensitive to the people who say you're talking over your wife,
Oh,
Benjamin.
you're
And
not.
she's just a water bucket boy or handmaiden
Don't be
for your water
sensitive.
buckets.
Don't.
But I just defeating the cult of Moloch, raising its temples, vilifying through the streets its practitioners and its priests is the goal. That's the most important goal. And insofar as feminism can go, come and go, and they have their rights of women and let women speak and all that stuff, like, I don't understand all that. I don't know about that, but we have to stop the children from their bodies being butchered. We have to stop that. And these women who are going along with that and then, like, turning it in all about them and, like, going through all these things, it's ridiculous. It's funny. It's fodder. But that shit is if that is extending the life of gender ideology and the medicalization and surgical intervention of children a minute longer, it is evil.
It just, to me, it seems like skirmishes taking place off the battlefield. And so it's not necessarily the most important place to focus.
Steel sharpens steel, kind of thing.
I don't know. I guess I just the I'm not trying to defend feminism. I to me it seems like if we're talking about form versus substance, content versus process, feminism is a thing that this process can revolve around. It is an area that this can it's an area of content that might be particularly odious for some people. Orwell's House Cat apparently has a bone to pick with this. You have a bone to pick with this. That's fine, but I think that you can end up losing sight of the fact that this is a process that's happening over and over and over, and I think that it's more important to talk about the process. The content is equally important, but you can't let it overshadow the fact that this process is not created by that content. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so I guess when we're talking about like the gender medicine thing, gender affirmative medicine, it's to me it's a question of medical ethics. And so what a whole bunch of people think about it, and all the bickering that happens in the little Twitter accounts here and there, it just seems like it's noise. It's noise. At the end of the day, this is a medical ethics question. This is a scandal. It's malpractice. It's very clear if you're and that's the place to focus. And going and having some snippy little, back and forth with some person who doesn't like the way you joke with your wife, not you specifically, but like,
Yeah,
this
I know
little
what you're
thing,
saying.
this seems like it just feels like not a very interesting place to
See, you are like Eleanor Roosevelt. You want to argue ideas, not people.
Maybe.
Do you have any? Is there?
You should read the super chat that you got.
Was there another? Yeah, I read it.
Oh, you did? Oh,
is there a particularly admirable person in your life, like somebody that you've looked up to over the years? Somebody who
my dad.
Yeah, your dad.
Yeah.
Why? What quality do you really admire in your father? Or qualities?
He's very good at seeing all sides of a thing. He's able to be dispassionately analytical about things and equally compassionate to all sides, which is, I know that sounds like a bit of a contradiction, but he is non-judgmental most of the time and more seeks to understand. And so I have always really admired that in him. Even when I was a kid and I did things that like I'd get in a lot of trouble with my mother, and my father would be understanding. He would more feel bad for me that I'd gotten myself in that trouble. Yeah. And he would.
Did you, in one of our conversations, do you remember you told, or maybe just in our private conversation, our public conversations and our private conversations, there's just this story of you getting in trouble and walking in and like the way that your dad looked at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if you told that.
I don't
before.
Know if I've
you
told
don't have
that.
To, yeah. You don't have to, you'd have to go through the whole story.
I'd have to tell you the whole
but
thing.
But like there's, yeah. There's this.
Yeah. My mom got super mad and it was something that, you know, was pretty awful. And I got into a lot.
Or,
no, I.
You ran
I
over was, a homeless guy?
I was 15. I shoplifted. Yeah, me and my girlfriend stole some stuff and we got caught. And then we were being held by the little security guard. And my mom got called and I was picked up. And my mom was furious. She was furious. And she was, she like smacked me and yelled at me. And I got this terrible dressing down all the way home. She was so angry. She was just seething with, well, she was humiliated that I had done that. And she was also so disappointed in me. Just like, how could my child.
Yeah.
You know, and so the anger was palpable, literally. And then I got home and I walked in the door and my dad must have been, she must have told him. So he knew exactly what had happened. And he was sitting there reading a book and he put his book down. And he looked up at me. He goes, "Hi, honey." And he like gave me this like really, it was gentle. He greeted me. He looked at me. He looked sad. I felt his disappointment, but I also felt like he loved me.
Yeah.
And that, in that moment, I felt like really guilty that I had disappointed my father. And I didn't feel a drop of guilt towards my mother. I felt pissed off and defiant towards my mother that whole time. And she was railing against me. All it did was make me feel ragey and defiant.
But did she not father, give you room? So he gave you room. To correct yourself, and she didn't give you room to correct yourself.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it. And I think, like, later on, I came to understand my mom's perspective. But in the moment,
yeah,
as a kid, that that was really, that kind of stayed with me, that his response was, it wasn't about him. It was about what I was doing. And his, I guess on some level, it was also that it showed that he had faith in my own moral development. Like, he could see that I would be in a complex space with what had happened.
Mm.
And she didn't have that. She just was, I think there was a desperation to put me on the right path,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. I guess we should wrap up, but that broaches the topic of authority and direction. And we're kind of like, we've been flirting with that idea
that would
about
be.
The conversation around like
whole nother conversation.
What is authority? What is correction? What is proper correction? Mm-hmm. What is guidance? You know, do we guide each other mm-hmm. in the same way we guide the boys? You know, and I think like there's a continuum of guidance going on.
Well, it's really informed my perspective as a parent. I really don't like to parent using anger. I use it. It's a seasoning, the voice of seasoning.
Yeah.
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 You should put that on your apron. Well,
I like volume.
Yeah, you do.
But anger is,
yeah. Anger is.
Feeling it. Yeah, I don't like feeling.
Yeah, I believe in trying to be in control of oneself.
Positive regard. That is the ideal. Mm-hmm. Patience, positive regard.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit
did
of
did you have any comments you wanted to read before we wrap up?
I don't think so, but
did
I did have like did I tell you guys my idea
mm-hmm.
about Yes, we should wrap up. But I just have this idea that, there's this massive wave of homeschooling going on. And we know from the millennials and Gen Xers, or Zs, we know as a society that a bully-free zone creates probably the biggest assholes on the planet. Like, without bullying, there's some sort of developmental process that a kid misses out on. So as I was thinking of forming for these homeschoolers, trauma-informed, psychologically responsible bullying, where I kind of go in there, I hang out with them, and I mock them relentlessly, and I'm trying it out on your kid. He has this, can I tell the Bree story?
Oh no,
There we
yeah,
go.
poor kid.
Poor kid. He
Oh
was trying to cut
man.
Brie. The cheese, not
Please.
Larson, not Brie Larson, like just the cheese. There was this block of cheese.
Would have been sitting on the counter.
It
It
had been
was room
sitting,
temp.
so it was room temp. It was kind of squishy.
He
And
kept
so you could,
squishing
and he had a knife, and he was over there. He was
it.
complaining about cutting the cheese.
But
And
you
there's a joke there.
understand that he was, it was because he wanted a nice cut and he was
And
mushy.
he like and he just like and he was going after and like you were just like you're like I'm not touching this and I'm like I
He was
can't.
really upset.
He was getting
He
more
was
and more
getting
frustrated
frustrated.
and like I'm like how can you not cut cheese? So now and then what happens and this is where it pulls. And then like earlier this week, Leslie wants to make me a charcuterie,
No, you're showing
and
weight.
she takes out a steak knife. And tries to cut some Gouda, which is a medium soft cheese, and she misses and lops half of her finger off with a serrated blade. So now there's like this public service announcement: how many days of successfully cutting cheese? And there's two steps to cutting cheese: one, cut the cheese; two, don't cut yourself. So we're working with both of you guys to figure out like this is how you cut cheese, and like with Adrian, with the boy. Like you just have to make a decision, go through it. You don't wait for the cheese to let you cut it. You cut the cheese. You go in there, you make the decision. Like he has a problem with just like committing to this act. And like a knife doesn't naturally just spread something out. Like, but it will if you're just like waiting for resistance. You have to go in there, you have to cut the cheese. And you have to like not cut yourself. So
And you are an expert on cutting the
I'm
cheese.
cutting the cheese night and day around here. Here we go. We're not quite at the I farted t-shirt stage in our relationship,
Yeah,
or who
no, well, that won't
farted,
be a shirt I would ever
the
wear.
Leslie Nielsen fart machine. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Like and subscribe. Follow Leslie at the Radical Center. She does live streams every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific. I have a lot of content in the pipeline and looking for more content to produce. So please add any suggestions for who you would like to be interviewed by me, or if you guys have cool little Reddit threads that you would like me to read. I do want to do more content where I just read something silly online because that's kind of a fun little one-off.
Yeah, it is fun. It's good. It's good to listen to.
Let the hair down.
Thank you guys for joining us
Yeah.
and have a good Sunday. Have a
Yes.
good week.
Oh yeah, and enjoy game day.